Today's shir is Masech Daf Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Dalet. We will begin on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Darash Mereima Kunya, as we discussed at the end of previous shir, Kunya are glazed earthenware vessels, Bein Uchma, whether if they're black, Bein Chivra, white, Bein Yerik, green, yellow, Shari. They may be used if they were used for Stam Yenam. Ask the Gemara, if that is indeed the case, Mishnah becomes for Pesach, why do we treat these vessels differently as far as Halachas of Stam Yenam than we do the way we treat them regarding Chametz and Pesach? The Bar-Minei Mereima, the following question was asked of Mereima. Hani may mani de kunya. These earthenware vessels, these glazed earthenware vessels, malushtamush buba pescha, may they be used on Pesach without kashering? And says the Gemara, when the question was posed to Merema, Yeroika like to boilach, it comes when we speak about a green, yellow, glaze, loy mitzar, loy tibolach, there is no question that mitzarfi ubali vasiri, that they are highly absorbent and therefore cannot be used on Pesach. Ki tibolach, when is there a question? Chivri v'uchmi mai, if they have a white or black glaze. Furthermore, says the Gemara, ki isbe kartafuni, if they have cracks in them, again, as we discussed at the end of the previous year, loy tibaylach, again, there is no question. The vadi bali, that they're certainly very absorbent for asiri, and therefore may not be used. Ki tibaylach, the question is, when it has the white or black glaze, which are not as absorbent as the green-yellow glaze, and it doesn't have any cracks. Kitibaylach, the question is in a situation, the shi, where they are smooth. What is the halacha? Can they be used or not? Mai. And Amalhu, he responded, Anochazinalhu, I saw the midamaisi, that since they sweat, since they expel the absorption, and because they expel, they sweat, they expel the liquid that they absorb, vadi bali, certainly it's a raya that they have a very significant absorption, vasiri, and therefore they may not be used. Why? My tama, because a tori ida aklicheris. The Torah says when it comes to earthenware vessels, she'ene yoytz midei dafna me'elam, that it never leaves, it remains in the vessel forever. So that's why it may not be used on Pesach. So before we go any further, there are two points I'd like to discuss. One question is that there's an obvious question. It was obvious to me as I learned this Gemara. The Gemara is teaching us that the Torah says that when it comes to Kli Cheres, Eini Yotzim Dei Dofna L'Olam, whatever is absorbed remains there forever. Where does it say so in the Torah? Because the Torah speaks about vessels, utensils that were used for cooking different carbonas. And the Torah says that if a copper pot was used to cook the carbon, and we know that every carbon after a certain amount of time becomes nicer, so the absorption in that pot is now nicer. If you want to use that pot again, you have to kasher it. So the Torah says that if you use an earthenware pot, which can't be kashered, there's no way that you could reuse the pot. So if that's the case, as the Torah says so very explicitly, why does the Gemara say a moment before that, you know why this keli, this earthenware, glazed earthenware vessel may not be used? Because we see the maisi, that it expels, it sweats on the exterior. And since it sweats on the exterior, it's clear that it had absorption. Why is this all relevant? If the Gemara is teaching us, and as the Pasuk teaches us, that Kli Cheres can't be kashed, that's what the Gemara should have said. Kli Cheres can't be kashed. Case closed. Why does the Gemara have to first give this introduction that the Maisi, that it sweats? So Mefarshim explained that indeed the Torah clearly teaches us that Kli Cheres can't be kashered. But what the Gemara is trying to prove is that perhaps there are different types of Kli Cheres. And some Kli Cheres indeed can't be kashered, but there are other Kli Cheres that can be kashered. Says the Gemara, what will it depend on? Maybe other Kli Cheres don't have this level of absorption. Says the Gemara, this Kli Cheres that we're discussing today, Midamaisi, since it sweats, so clearly that's the Kli Cheres that has absorption, and since it has absorption, that's why the Torah, din of the Torah, that the Torah says the Kli Cheres can't be kashered, applies to these kalim, and that's why the question that was asked about the kalim, as far as Chametz for Pesach, is answered. But then Tosfos asks another question. We know that even though we're learning now that Kli Cheres, as we just discussed, the Torah says, can't be kashered, there is something that can be done to kosherize the Kli Cheres. And that is Chazer L'Kivshonai. Take it back to the kiln, take it back to the furnace where it's made, and so to speak, remake it, remanufacture it, and then it's kosher. Then it could be kosher. So ask Tosfos, why is Al-Gemar making a blanket statement? The Kli Cheres cannot be kashered. We just came up with a way that it can be kashered. So I saw two answers. One answer is, what happens when you put a Kli Cheres back into the furnace? What you're actually doing is Ponim Chadoshes Bolokan. It's not the old Kli Cheres. There's entirely new Kli Cheres. That's not kashering. Kashering means to take the Kli Cheres that we have, to take the vessel that we have, and kosherize it. Here we're not kosherizing, we're recreating it. That's not called kashering. Another teretz is, and this is a fundamental teretz, because this teretz speaks to what kosherization, what kashering means. What kashering means is Kabbalah Kechpoltoi. That the way it was absorbed, that's the way it's expelled. That's how a gola works, that's how a libum works. So what kashering essentially does is it draws out any bleis. The kashering of chayzelik of shanai is not drawing out any bleis, it's burning the bleis that are in the walls of this vessel. That's not kashering. The Gemara here is speaking about kashering, and the Gemara is saying the Kli Cheres can't be kashered. So ask the Gemara, if we've now established that these glazed Kli Cheres cannot be kashered for Pesach. So if so, ask Gemara, Ma'ishtam Yayin Nesach, why is this different than the Yayin Nesach that we learned in the previous year? Ma'ishtam Yayin Nesach, the Darshle Mirayma, Kulamanya the Kar Yashari, that you can kosherize these vessels if they held Stam Yainim. V'chitayim, and if you'll argue, Chometz is a question of the Raisa. Yayin Nesach is a question of the Rabbanon, and that's why we're more lenient. And of course, the Mefarshim say the Gemara could have right away said that Stam Yenom is the Rabbanon. Yayin Nesach is not the Rabbanon. Yayin Nesach is the Raisa. But the Gemara wants to show that this attempted answer wouldn't even be good for the Rabbanon, because we have a rule throughout Shas called the Tikkun Rabbanon Kein, the Raisa Tikkun. So, if we're saying that you can't kasher these Kalim for Pesach, why could it be kashered Stam Yenom? Rather, answers the Gemara, the reason we're stricter when it comes regarding Pesach than when it comes according to Stam Yenom, Zet Hashmisha B'chamen, Zet Hashmisha B'tzoinen. This is used with heat, the keli for Pesach. That's why there's a heavier, higher level of absorption versus when it's used for cold. It doesn't have the same level of absorption. Why it's used for cold? And that's why it could be kashered. Points out the Ritva. So, if we know that this keli that was used for Stam Yenom was used for hot wine, then it would have the same din. Just the Ritva says that what he means to say is, it's only in a situation that we specifically know that was used for hot wine. Let's say I don't know if it was used for hot wine or cold. We have no reason to assume that it was used for hot wine. Wine is usually consumed cold, not hot. And therefore, we have no reason to be concerned that it's had this bliya. The Ritva does say, and this is a concept that we're going to discuss later in our perek, the concept of nois tamud gam, that after 24 hours that a vessel was used, any bliya it has is a tampogam. So in order to avoid any question that if it was used for hot wine and does have a bliya of hot wine, never kasher it before it wasn't used, never kasher it within 24 hours of use. Says the Gemara, Rekiva Ikla Leginzik. Rekiva came to the city of Ginzik. Actually, there's a machloikus rishonim if this girsa of the Gemara of Rekiva is correct. Because as we're about to learn, Rekiva, who was asked three questions and didn't know the answer to any of them. And the Mefarshim say it's highly unlikely that the great Rabbi Kiva wouldn't be able to answer these three questions. So that's why some Rishonim have the girsa not of Rabbi Kiva, but rather Mar Ukva. Others say, another Rai why it's not Rabbi Kiva, the Rishonim say, is because the way the Gemara is worded, it's not worded as if it was referring to a Tana. And therefore they say it's either Marukva. Others say that it's Rabbi Kiva, but there was not just Rabbi Kiva, the great Tana, who we were all familiar with, but there was an Amira with the name Rabbi Kiva. And yet others say that yes, it was Rabbi Kiva. Even great people don't know the answers to every question. So the first question that was asked for him, of him was, by my name is Anam Lashos, Aim Sanam Lashos. So we're going to explain the Gemara the way most Rishonim, including Taisus, first explain it. The halacha is, as we know, that if somebody wants to fast, we're not talking about a Tanis Sibur. A Tanis Sibur is a Tanis under all circumstances. But let's say somebody wants to fast on a certain day. The day before, preferably at Mincha, he should be Makabel Tanis. He should accept himself Tanis. The question the Gemara here is asking is if a person accepted today Mincha the following Tanis. Tomorrow, if I end up, it happens, that I'm not going to eat the first half of the day, I was too busy, I didn't eat the first half of the day. You know what? I'll keep the rest of the day with a tainus. Is that considered a tainus shos or not? So the Mefarshim asks, L'may nafkamina? If you don't want to eat, don't eat. So they say, the nafkamina is because on a tainus, by mincha, we say aneinu. The Gemara's question is, if somebody did this, he made this kabbalah today for tomorrow, and then he ends up fasting tomorrow, would he say aneinu by mincha or not? Other Rishonim, Taisus himself says this, that even though l'chatchila, you're supposed to be Mekabel Tainus the day before, if you weren't Mekabel Tainus, the Tainus is still a Tainus. And other Rishonim make the following distinction. They say, if you're going to fast the whole day, then certainly you have to be Mekabel Tainus. But here we're speaking about a Tainus Shos. A Tainus Shos doesn't require Kabbalah's Tainus. Another reason why it's important to know if this is a Tainus or not, explain the Mefarshim. Because let's say a person accepted upon himself to fast a certain amount of days, fast a certain amount of partial days. Is this considered that is this day counted towards fulfilling his obligation or not? Says the Gemara, Lehava Biyode. He didn't have an answer. Next question. Can Kanim Shalav de Kachavim, the barrels that the Akum used for Stam Yainam, Asurim Umatarim, do they need to be kashered? Again, says the Gemara, Lo have a biyade. He didn't know the answer. We all recall the parish in the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu was acted as the Kohen for the first 7 days of the inauguration of the Mishkan. And the question is, what begodim did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? Why? Because the big day kahuna, Pashup Shat, are limited to Aaron and his children, to Kohanim. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't a Kohen, he was a Levi. So what begodim did he wear? Another reason that the Mefarshim explained the Gemara's question is, because the Gemara says that the Mishkan really wasn't completely inaugurated yet. You only wear Big Day Kahuna when you have a Mishkan. You didn't have yet a Mishkan. Another way of explaining this is that you don't have Big Day Kahuna without a Mishkan. So if you don't have a Mishkan, you don't have the Big Day Kahuna. So the Big Day Kahuna didn't mean anything, and therefore the Gemara wants to know what did Moshe Rabbeinu wear as he did that Avodah. Again, he didn't know the answer to this question either. Says the Gemara, also Shabbat Medrasha. So they went to the yeshiva to try to get the answer to these questions. Amri, and they were told, Hilchasa, the halacha is Mesanam Lashos. A tainus, even for a number of hours, is a tainus. Mr. Brewer, actually based on the Ramah, has a very serious discussion What happens if somebody only fasts part of the day? By mincha, if he's still fasting, let's say, does he say a neinu or not? It seems from the remark that if somebody accepted a tainus the day before, they're going to fast a half a day. Very common people do this during the Seres Yimei Tshuva, Rosh Hashanah, that they're going to fast only a half a day, and they fast that half a day. The remark, as the Bir Halacha explains, says you should say aneinu by mincha. Especially since you're not saying a bracha. Aneinu is a tefillah. When a yochid says aneinu nishman esrei, he's not adding any brachas. The question is, if somebody had a tanis shos without kabbalah's tainus, what should he do? So the Mishnah Brura again goes back and forth. It seems the way I understand the Paiskim hold, he should still say aneinu, but he should omit the words b'yoyim tzoyim tanaseinu. He should say the tefillah of aneinu without the words yoyim tzoyim tanaseinu. The Mishlam, mispal tefillah tanas, he says aneinu. V'ilchasa, kakanim, shleiv de kachavim, these jugs, lach yud beis chodesh mitarim. And the Gemara now is introducing a new concept. In our previous year, and we'll discuss this again, we learned about the way the kasher vessels that were used for stam yenom with milui v'iri. Our shiur today is teaching us that if you leave these vessels unused for 12 months, then, and you rinse them after the 12 months, that's also considered a valid way of using them. And regarding the question of b'mashim ishmoshe shivas shimei meluim, what the Moshe Rabbeinu wear during the shivas shimei meluim? B'chalok loven. He wore a white robe. Rav Kahana asked him b'chalok loven, and had a white robe, she'em be'imra, that didn't have in it a hem. Why didn't I have a hem? So Rashi explains, because in order, if something has a hem, in order should be that he shouldn't be accused that he stuck something into the hem, stole something from the Mishkan and stuck it into the hem. So therefore, he didn't have a hem on his garment. But Rashi himself finds difficulty with this pshat, because Rashi says, by the time Moshe Rabbeinu did the avodah, there was nothing to take. The Mishkan was complete. So therefore, Tosfos and other Rishonim give a number of answers, explanations. One explanation is that he wanted to show that this was different and it was new, so he didn't have a hem, something that was never used before. Another pshat is that it's not the word imra with an aleph, but rather it's imra with an ayin. Imra with an ayin means it wasn't made out of wool. We know, we've discussed this, we will discuss it again, that the Bigdei Kahuna were made out of shatnas, wool and linen, and the Torah allows it. And what the Gemara is saying is the Kohanim have a special dispensation that they are allowed to wear Bigdei Kahuna that are shatnas. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have that dispensation, so Ein by Imra, there was no wool, it was purely linen. Another pshat that I saw, beautiful pshat, is when does a person typically make a hem on a garment? If you buy a garment for your son, for your daughter, for your child, you're going to make a hem because you expect them to grow and they're going to need to be able to still wear the pants or the dress. So you'll have a hem that you can let out. Moshe Rabbeinu was announcing, I'm not getting this job permanently. It's only for these 7 days. I'm not going to reuse it, so I don't need to make a hem. Another pshat is what is the difference between a person and a malach? A person, when he constantly grows, he adds, he's growing. A malach already reaches the highest madrega, and that's where he remains. A beggar, aimed by Imra, it's not patched together. It was one long garment. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was at that madrega, the Moshe Rabbeinu was at that madrega that he didn't have to grow anymore. He was already at the highest madrega. He was like a malach, one piece of material. And in fact, I saw that the Shema Tzion Balacha explains, that's why the minig is that a chosin wears a kittel, a white garment like that, under the chuppah. Because a chosin moichel moichel avanaisov, he has a completely clean slate. Since he has a completely clean slate, that's why he should wear that kind of a beged. Similarly, the Mefarshim explained, this is why the minig is that on Yom Kippur, we wear a kittel, because we're like Moshe Rabbeinu, we're all doing davaida, we're all like malachim, so we should wear such a beged. That's also why Pesach, by the Seder, we wear such a beged. Again, because every Jew sitting by a Seder table is doing an avaida like he was in the Mishkan. In fact, I saw a very interesting minig. I never saw the minig before, but apparently there were communities that the minig was that by a bris, the Avi Ben, the father of the child, and the Moil and the Sandak would all wear white kitlach. Why? Again, because somebody's doing a bris on a son is like bringing a carbon. Beautiful word from the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks a question. We know that when the Torah describes the Big Day Kahuna, the Torah uses the words l'kavod v'l'sfaras. They're there for honor and glory. And he finds these words hard to understand. That's why the Kohanim needed to wear the Big Day Kahuna. So he says a beautiful pshat based on our Gemara. He says, what the Torah is teaching us is that of course those begotten were worn only for honor and glory. Because to be yaitza, to fulfill the obligation of wearing a beggar to the Avoda, our Gemara says you could just wear a chaluk lovin. The fact that the Kohanim didn't just wear a chaluk lovin, they wore those beautiful begotten, it must be l'kavod u'l'svaras. And the Maram Shik explains why did they indeed have to wear begotten that were l'kavod u'l'svaras. So Maram Shik explains that the Kohen, first of all, has to recognize who he is, and he also has to, that everybody else has to recognize who he is. How do we come through such, to such a recognition? The Big Day Kahuna bring about that type of recognition. Beautiful verse from the Kedusha Slavi in our Gemara. Kedusha Slavi says, what is the lesson of our Gemara? He says, the lesson of our Gemara is that there are many different ways of serving Hashem. And all the different ways of serving Hashem are all legitimate. Everybody has his own derech. You have two brothers. You have Moshe Rabbeinu and you have Aaron. They both did avoid in the Mishkan, but they did avoid it differently. Moshe Rabbeinu did the avoida b'chaluk lovin. Aaron did the avoida with the Big Day Kahuna, but they both did the avoida. We have to respect and recognize that everybody has their own derech to how to do avoida Hashem. Another pshat that I saw, the Marv Shemes says this pshat. He says that what the Gemara here is teaching us is that how did Moshe Rabbeinu become worthy to do the avoida in the Mishkan? Not just to do the Avoda, he was the one that inaugurated the Mishkan. He was the first one to ever do the Avoda, aimed by Imra. He didn't open his mouth. He was the paradigm of Anava, the paradigm of humility. He never had anything to say. That's how somebody aimed by Imra, that's the person that could be the first person to do the Avoda. One final vart, a vart that I saw from the Beis Yisrael. He says, Al Gemara teaches us three questions that seem to be very, very not connected. One is about this, the begadim, the Big Day Kahuna. One is about the kaikanim, and one is about the Tanis Shas. What's the connection? Is there any connection between these three questions? He says a beautiful vort. He says the connection between these three questions is that the Gemara is trying to teach us the value of the moment, the value of every minute. Moshe Rabbeinu only did they avoid it for 7 days. He wasn't the permanent kohen. We speak about a Tanis Shas just for a couple of hours. We speak about kankanim that were used temporarily for non-kosher use, and now they're going to go back to kosher use. So we would think that something that's temporary has no value. Teaches us our Gemara that even something that's temporary, tanishos, avoided for 7 days, kalim that will be changed, even something used temporarily, every minute, every second is valuable. Continues the Gemara. Hachatzanim v'azagim shel avodat kochavim. We learned in the Mishnah that the pits and the peels of the grapes of the avodat kochavim are also. Tana banan. Hachatzanim v'azagim shel avodat kochavim. Lachim, if they're moist, asurim. Yveshim, if they're dry, mutarim. Ask the Gemara, hayninu lachim v'hayninu yveshim. When is it considered moist or when is it considered dry? Amar Yudah Mishmul. Lachim is called Yubeis Chodesh, the first 12 months. Yuveishim la'acha Yubeis Chodesh, after 12 months. Amar Rabba Babachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, regarding these chatzanim and zagim, k'shen asurim, as long as they're prohibited, asur afil b'hano, you're not allowed to have any benefit from them. On the other end, k'shen matarim, when you may have, matarim afil b'chil, you can eat. So a number of points to make lahalocha. First of all, the Yerushalmi says that even though we're saying the chatzanim and zagim are osur, they're only osur if they were, after the grapes were pressed, and wine already started coming out of these grapes. Jews started coming out of these grapes, and the Chatzanim v'Zagim were there with the grapes that became, with the juice that became non-kosher, then we have a problem. But if the seeds or peels were removed before the juice was squeezed out, they're mutter. Furthermore, Tosfos says in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, it's not just enough that they should be left for 12 months. It has to be that they were also soaked and any juice in them was extracted. On the other hand, most Rishonim are of the opinion that if we see that they are dry before 12 months, it wouldn't make a difference. We have to wait for 12 months. There is a machlokes Rishonim. What would be the halacha if somebody took these grape, these seeds and these peels and burnt them, dried them over the fire? Is 12 months still required? Or since he went through the process of drying them out, 12 months wouldn't be required. It's actually machlokes Rishonim. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Zvud, hay de doya de chamra moy, the sediment of the wine of the Akum, the Armenian Akum, it's the same old wine. Basa Tresi Yacha Sharati Shari. After 12 months, they are mutter, like the Chatzan and Mezagim. Amrav Chaviva Bereid the Rava. Hai Gulfi. These barrels, as we discussed earlier, that were used for non-kosher wine, Basa Tresi Yacha, if they were left not used for 12 months, Shari. Amrav Chaviva. Hani after the Taya. Machlok Rishonim, what is after the Taya? Some Rishonim explain, that's how Rashi explains, that it's made out of a thick leather, which is highly absorbent, that are used by the merchants that use it for traveling. Others explain what they used to do was that a very primitive type of vessel, they used to take a cucumber, hollow out the middle, and use that to transport wine. After 12 years, they could be used for kosher wine. On Ravach Breder of Ika, Hani Partsuni Dramoi, these leftovers of the grapes, Basa Triasiyach Shari, they could be used. On Ravach Breder Rava, Hani Gulfi Shchimi, these black, Vuchmi, these black kalim that are used by the Akum for their wine. And there's two ways of understanding what's pshat that they're black. One pshat is that they're black because they use so much, they become black. Another pshat is that they're made out of a material, out of an earth that's black, and that's why they're highly absorbent. Basa Tresi Yacha Shati Shari, after 12 months, they can be used. Hamurius. So our Mishnah discussed the Murius, which is a dip made out of fish sauce. And there's a concern that somebody's going to pour, that they used wine in this fish dip. Tanabon, Murius Umen, the one that's prepared by a professional. So the professional is going to be careful, as the Gemara is going to explain in a moment, not to have to use wine, because under certain circumstances, the professional recognizes the wine is not needed. Not only is it not needed, it actually is detrimental. So we don't have to be concerned, and that's why the Murius is mutter. Whereas the average non-professional, who isn't so proficient in knowing how Murius is made, he doesn't know this, and we have to be more concerned. So again, Tana Brannan, Murius umen mutter. Yehuda ben Gamliel, Oyem Hashem, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, af chilk umen. Chilk is a type of fish, and it's a kosher fish. We're going to discuss this more later in the parak. It's a kosher fish. It's a small kosher fish that when it comes up, it actually doesn't have fins and scales. And it's very easy, it's very common, perhaps, for the non-kosher species of fish to get mixed up with the chilk. And therefore, if we buy it from a non-professional, given that there's a concern that there's non-kosher fish mixed in here, we can't use it. However, a professional is concerned and is careful to separate the non-kosher fish from the kosher fish, and therefore, mutter. It can be bought without any problem, even from an akum. Tana vima breder avavua. Murius uman, as we just said, mutter. Hu tanala, vuhamala, But he explained this halacha. Pam Rishon V'Sheni, the first or second time that you're drawing out, you're extracting the oil from the fish, whereas I just said a moment ago, and the Gemara will say, since it's heavy with the oil, the wine is counterproductive, so we have no reason to be concerned that there was wine added. Shlishi, it needs more of an extraction, it's asur. My tama, as we just explained, Pam Rishavishaini, the Nafish Munayu, it has a heavy oil content. Light Sarach Lemirma Bachamra, there's no need to put wine to draw out the fish oil. On the contrary, it's counterproductive. And therefore, we could assume that it's fine. Mikan ve'elech, Ram Bachamra. Wine is added, and therefore, without knowing when the wine was specifically not added, we should not use it. Says the Gemara. Who arbed the Maraisa? There was this shipment of Murias, the Osa Lenamila de Akoi, that came to the port of Akoi. Osa of Abedim in Akko, Rav Abedim in Akko, the Turi Bahadur. He put Shoimrim, he put guards to watch that nobody should tamper with it and put into it non-kosher ingredients. Omle Rava. So Rava said to him, Adi Idna Manatra, who watched it till now? Now you're putting guards until it got here without any Shmira. So what's the point of now putting on guards? Interesting to point out that the Yavit says, based on this Gemara, that we see that Rava was in Eretz Yisrael. We're used to learning that Rava lived in Bavel. Says the Yavit, that every Amira, even if they lived in Bavel, at one point they were in Eretz Yisrael, because everybody went to Israel to learn Torah at one point. Until now, what do we need to be concerned? Is you concerned that they added wine? Kissa the Murius Bluma, Kissa the Chamra Bedalumi. He said there's no reason to have that concern. Murius is so much cheaper than wine. So there's no reason to believe that somebody would adulterate Murius with wine when wine is so much more expensive than Murius. It doesn't make any sense. They traveled by Tzor, where in Tzor, Shava Chamri, wine is cheaper. So maybe where it was manufactured, Murius is cheaper than wine. But then they travel by a place where wine is cheaper than Murius, and therefore the concern that it was adulterated with wine comes about. I'm not worried that they stopped by Tzor. Since the water was very choppy there, they just went on. They didn't stop the boat there. And Tosfos and the Rishonim, based on this Gemara, say a very important concept. First of all, they teach us that foods, and we're going to discuss this as we get deeper into the Perek, different foods that are mutter and usser. Tosfos says clearly, Murius is not in the category of a food that Chazal said is usser under all circumstances, like we'll learn is the case by Bishul Akum, like we'll learn is the case by Gvinas Akum. Rather, Murius is only usser in a situation where we have reason to believe that there's a problem with the Murius. But if we have no reason to believe that there's a problem with the Murius, it's completely fine. And Tosfos goes on to say that that's the case in any type of situation where we're concerned for adulteration. If we have reason to believe, do we have reason to believe that there's nothing to be gained by adulteration? We need not to be concerned. Where does this come up? The question comes up, let's say somebody had left his pots and pans, which you're not supposed to do, and his food with a non-religious Jew. The question, and he gave the food, he gave the ingredients. Must we be concerned that he substituted and put in different food, took the Jew's food and put in somebody else's food? So the Paiskim Paskin, La Loch Lamaisa, the Rishonim already discussed this. They say if it's a situation where the Akam has nothing to gain by substituting, that means, let's say my kosher meat is no better than his non-kosher meat. So therefore there's no reason to believe that he took out my kosher meat and substituted with non-kosher meat because he has nothing to gain by doing it. It's mutter. What the Rosh does say, and other Rishonim discuss, is that's only in a regular situation. If the Akum has nothing to gain by substituting, we don't have to be concerned about chalufi. But what would be the case where the atom indeed has nothing to gain other than making me feel good? What's the example? Let's say I leave a non-Jewish chef in my home to cook. So as I said, he has nothing to gain by taking my kosher meat and substituting it with his non-kosher meat. Let's say it's not better, so he has nothing to gain. But maybe we have to be concerned that since I hired him and he wants to make a good impression on me, he's going to throw in some non-kosher ingredients, not because he has something to gain. He has to gain that I'll be satisfied with his work. And he wants me as his employer to feel good about him. The person will say, now it's a different situation. And we do have to be concerned. And in that case, the only way you could allow that to happen, the Paiskim I saw only give two heterim. One is that you have to be a yoytzev nechnas. You have to keep on coming into the room so he should know that you can walk in any moment unannounced. Or, it's not something easy to say, you have to lock him into the room, make sure that there's nothing non-kosher in the room, lock him in the room, and let him cook in the room where he can't use anything non-kosher because there's no way for him to come or go. Continues the Gemara. The Gvinas Peis Unaiki. We spoke about Gvinas Peis Unaiki. We begin the sugyas of Gvinas Akam. Amr Shimon Lokish. Mneima Osru Gvinas Unaiki. Why did Chazal say that this cheese is Osru? Answers the Gemara. Neshiroiv Agolim Shloise Eir Neshchotim Lavod Kechavim. Most calves in that city were used for Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the way they used to make cheese, as we'll see, they used to take out the milk in the stomach of the animal. And the milk of the stomach of an animal that was brought for Avodah Zarah, as we've been learning, is Asr. Ask the Gemara, my Eri, Roiv Agolim, why do we have to say that Roiv of the Agolim are used for Avodah Zarah, Afil Miyat Nami, even if just a Miyat of the Agolim were used for Avodah Zarah, it should be concerned. Because we have throughout Chas the opinion of Rameya, who's Chayish L'Miyutah. Where we find Rameya's Chayish L'Miyutah? Gemara that we learned. The Gemara Masech Yevamos teaches us that if a man dies without any children, his wife has to have Yibam or Chalitza. However, the halacha is that if the woman is an islandess, or the man, the brother, is a Saris, there is no din of Yibam. So the Rabbanim's opinion is, most people are Baruch Hashem not islandess or not Saris, and they could do Yibam. Rameh is Chayish, that maybe she's an islandess, maybe she's a Saris, and until we know for certain that she is not an islandess, and he is not a Saris, they shouldn't do Yibam. So we see Rameh is Chayish from Yutah. So the Gemara's question is, why do we have to have a situation that it's, why does the Gemara have to say Rov HaGolem, even if it's not Rov, even if it's Miut, it should be enough of a reason to make the cheese Osir? Answers the Gemara. I amit Rov, ikamiut. If you'll say the Rov HaGolem are used, so now, even though you have a Miut, there'll be a legitimate concern. Eli amit. But if you're going to say that only a Miut, a minority of the calves, are used for Avodah Zarah, so we'll have a double problem. You'll have the following. We'll have a situation that most calves are not brought for Avodah Zarah. Furthermore, it's not only calf that's used for making cheese. It's other animals that are also not used, that are used to make cheese. And those animals are not brought for Avodah Zarah. So we'll have a situation of a miyuta de miyuta. A miyut of calves and all the other animals. Even Rameyu's chayish l'miyuta, miyuta de miyuta loy chayish Rameyu. That much he's not worried. And therefore, if we want to say there's a chashash, it has to be roi v'golem l'avodah zara. So even though there are other animals that are not brought for avodah zara, but the roi of the agolem avodah zara, and that's enough of a reason for Rameyu to be concerned and ask for the cheese. And once he answers this cheese, all cheese becomes awesome. Ask Tysus, but why don't we apply here a cheskas heter? The chazok is that the animal is not avodah zarah. So until we have a proof that it's not, that there is an issue, why don't we rely on the cheskas heter? So Tysus says you can't rely on a chazaka, because obviously the chazaka has been tampered with, because the animal was slaughtered. And once the animal is slaughtered and we're saying that Roiv Agolim Nishchatim L'Avodah Zarah, we can no longer rely on the Chazaka. Amalei Rav Shimon ben Eliyakim or Shimon ben Lakish. Ki Nishchatim L'Avodah Kachavim Mayhava. Even if you'll say that most animals are slaughtered for Avodah Zarah, what should that make a difference? V'Athu D'Shari. Aren't you the one that said that an animal that's slaughtered for Avodah Zarah doesn't necessarily disqualify the animal? Ditmer has shoich res behema. If somebody shechs an animal, lizrik dam al avodas kachavim, in order that he's slaughtering the animal with the intent that he will sprinkle the blood for avodas zara, or a hak the chelbal avodas kachavim will burn its fat for avodas zara. Rabbi Yochanan masura. Rabbi Yochanan says that's enough to consider that animal takroivus avodas zara, because Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion mechashvim avodas levoida. That just like we find, because yapina chutz mepnim, let's learn this law. The halacha is that when we bring a carbon, if when somebody shechs the animal, for example, he has in mind that he's not going to do the zrika properly, or he's not going to eat the meat properly in the right time, in the right place, the carbon becomes pigal. Says Rabbi Yochanan, so too is the halacha by avodah zarah. That if somebody brings a carbon, an animal for avodah zarah, and while he's doing the shechita of that animal, he has a mind to do the zrika for the avodah zarah, or to do the aktara for the avodah zarah, it's considered takrivus avodah zarah. However, Rav Shimon ben Lakish I'm a terrorist. So he says, why would an animal that's slaughtered, why would an eagle, why would a calf that's slaughtered for avodah zarah become a takrivus avodah zarah? Typically, this is the way that we try and explain, what was the avodah? The avodah was the aktara, the avodah was the zrika. So if he did a shechita for that purpose, it doesn't become avodah zarah. Because according to Rish Lakish, we don't say like we say by kachim that the machshava by one avodah affects the status of the next avodah. Amalei. So why, even if it was slaughtered l'shem avodah zarah, does it, according to you, fall into the category of takroivus avodah zarah? Amalei. Terim nechshatach. A number of ways of explaining this. Some say, Terimnach Shatach, he was giving him a bracha, that you should have good mazel. Others say, Terimnach Shatach means pshat like this, you should have better luck next time. This time your question isn't a good question. Why? Because, indeed, Rish Lakish says that if you had machshava, but one avoida, by avoida zara, it doesn't affect the status of the animal. Here, while he was shechting, he meant that the shechita should be the avodah zara. That Rav Shlokesh will agree is considered takrivus avodah zara. Why does the Gemara say Gemara zvicha? Because our Gemara is following the opinion. Our Gemara is following the opinion that the Gemara zvicha at the end of the shechita is when the shechita becomes a shechita. Amar Yudah Shal Rav Shmuel. Amar, why is Gvinas Akum Asa? Amar Rav Akhtuvi Amar Rav. Hamakadish beperis sharaniskel. The milk that's found in the stomach of an animal is perish, is waste. So the halacha is if somebody uses that waste to be makadish and ishim kudeshes. The perish ugly as kachavim and mkudeshes. Ibai same we could explain that this is a svara. Ibai same a kra. Ibai same a svara. Gabli avodas kachavim. When it comes to avodah zarah, nichle benafchi. Everybody wants his avodah zarah to look husky. So the perish makes the animal look fatter, and that's why the perish has value. Avagab b'shara niskel, l'nichle b'nifchei. You want it to be easy to be killed. And therefore, he doesn't want it to be heavier, and therefore the perish is worthless. Ibai se makra. K'siv hocha l'yibag b'yotchem u'uma. It's a pasuk that anything of the avodah zarah is osur, as worthless as it is. K'siv hasam. B'sar yusakel hashar v'lo yoichlas b'saray b'sar asur. It's only the meat of the shar niskel that's asur hapirshim eteris. What is a nafkamina if we learn it from a pasuk or we learn it from a svara? So I saw two nafkaminas. One nafkamina is what would be the halacha if somebody wants. The Gemara says that by avodah zarah you want to perish and by shar niskel you don't. What would be if you have a person that you know the people that are always different? He wants the perish of the avodah zarah. He wants the perish of the shara niskel. He doesn't want the perish of avodah zarah. If it's based on a pasuk, so The pasuk is the pasuk. If it's based on logic, your logic could be different than the rest of the world. Another nafkamina is if the Torah tells us Pershim Uteris. The Torah teaches us explicitly that the perish of the Shar Niskel is mutter. So there's a famous Taz, I've quoted the Taz here previously, that even though the Rabbanan have a right to make Zeris, Rabbanan can't make Zeris against what the Torah says is mutter. So if it's a Svara, so even if a piece, the Rabbanan could say that maybe a piece Svara, the perish of the Shar Niskel, should be mutter, but we are going to make a Zeris that should be Osir. But if it's based on a Pasik, that the Torah teaches us Pirshim Muteres, then you can't, then the Rabbanan will not have a right to make a gzeira that it's also a gzeira, a din of the Torah is a din of the Torah under all circumstances.